Call this meeting to order. I'm gonna ask Ellie to take the role. Hi, Ellie, and welcome to Steve.
Thank you. Awa Kaliente Van Kalia Indian. City of Life. That's over here.
Here.
City of the
here.
Here. City of Coachella.
Here.
City of Desert Hot Springs.
Present.
City of Indian Wells.
Here.
City of India.
Present.
City of Lahinta.
Present.
City of Palm Desert.
Here.
City of Palm Springs. City of Grand Mirage.
Here.
County of Riverside.
Here.
Torres Martinez, Desert Kalia Indian.
You did.
Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you so much. With that, we'll move on to public comments on agenda items. And we do have Russ Betts. Russ, welcome. It does say item 6C here, but welcome.
And I didn't know if you were taking another weapon at the time of the end, but it's good. Fine here. My name's on the agenda, so seeking appointment. The appointment is Guy Transportation. I thought proper to come down here and formally let you know that I am interested in continuing in that position. I've been serving at Skag since 2013. I used to travel up there with Greg Pettit and work with him on different issues and supporting his efforts as he was the president of Skag. That time I served on the Goods Movement Committee, which has to do with transportation, and I also got very involved in the arena subcommittees. Most recently, with the big success we saw with Rusty Bailey from Riverside getting Los Angeles to agree with all of us that we needed a more equitable distribution. Along the way on Reno, so we ended up getting the equity modifier put in place, working with Hemet and San Jacinto. I took a brief time when Lisa Middleton was appointed. I was given a presidential appointment to CDHD. And then moved into the Arena Appeals Board.
That sets your time up.
You might have 3 minutes already.
No, Russell,
please.
Let's say that. You get all the time in the world to the dais. 3 minutes gets intimidated. Anyhow, with the thanks, Danny, you just threw me off my head's all the so
Russell, we whatever you want.
So anyway, it's just like the record, to make a good point. I was going to say, I got 54 cities mad at me when the arena's appeals process because they all, of course, wanted their numbers adjusted, and we all kept voting no. So any of the two.
We're going to blame you for
that's right. They don't blame me for that. Okay, so anyhow, I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Dana, and the rest of you. I appreciate it, and I would very much like to continue to serve at SCAG and Transportation Committee. Thank you.
I was going to vote for you, but I
thank you, and then with that, we'll move on to item number 4. This is the Chair Executive Director's announcement.
Again, welcome back to CBAG in person. This is our CBAG's first public meeting. It's been in person for 3 years, so it's good seeing all of you again. And we're getting used to the technology again, as you'll see. And you'll see us getting kind of up and down to make it as seamless as possible to involve life virtually under the old rules, where we notice people, and we can do that in the future, for certainly the City of Life and anybody else, but it does make it awkward when there are more than 2 or 3 that are virtual. We have to certainly notice that, like you used to do. If you're out of town, you have to have that spot available to the public if you want to speak. And on that front, we are active in Sacramento and tracking and likely very much supporting legislation that will allow virtual meetings to continue to occur, at least for regional agencies. I know there's a difference of opinion at city halls across the state, but certainly for big regional agencies with a big geography, right, Mark? It does make sense. It certainly is an efficient and effective way for us to meet and to get the public's work done. So we'll continue to track that. Now, maybe next year we'll be back and doing more and more virtual meetings, but we do appreciate you coming in
And the rest of this fiscal year, we do expect all of the meetings to be in person again. We have another bit of announcement. I think most of you know CVAG's offices have at least partially moved. We continue to rent. Thank you, City of Palm Desert. And this building, the Parkview building, we have our housing first team that's upstairs. We also have our traffic management center, and our staff is here. And they'll give you a little update on that, as well as one of the action items today relates to our traffic management center and signal synchronization. So we'll continue to use this space. We'll also have you, I'm sure, over to our new offices, which are continuing to be in Palm Desert. They're located at Highway 111 and El Paseo, next to Jay's Deli. I don't know the address, but that's where it is. One El Paseo building, the west side, ground floor. So with that, Mr. Chair, it's extended my report.
Yeah, next to Shogun. So
there you go.
And then I'll just announce that I've been communicating with our executive director about advanced transportation master plans. But basically, the idea is the state is asking us to move to EV and electrical cars. But I don't know that we have the electrical infrastructure, and so how does that look like for all of our cities? And the good thing is that the federal government has a lot of money, and that they put out, and the Fed put out some money for that, and we want to go and get some of that. And so hopefully we can come back with some advanced transportation master plan for the Coachella Valley and the county. I think it'd be a great thing. With that, we'll move on to item number 5, the consent calendar.
Introduction.
There's a motion. There's a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Any noes? All right. We'll move on to item number 6. This is a 6A transportation presentation on SB 821 Copper Project. Mr. Hoy, you want to introduce as well? Any folks from RCT that are here with you?
Good morning. Chair and members of the committee. The SB 821 program is administered by Riverside County Transportation Commission. And here today to give an update is Edward Henry.
Good morning, Commission members. My name is Edward Emery, Senior Management Analyst with RCPC Planning and Programming. This item is announced to call for projects for the fiscal year 23-24 SB 821 program. SB 821 is a discretionary program administered by the Commission to fund local bicycle and pedestrian programs. The program is funded through state sales tax, or specifically the Local Transportation Fund, or LTF. Every year, 2% of LTF revenues are set aside for competitive cost projects. Eligible projects include the construction of bicycle lanes and sidewalks, ADA curb ramps, the development of bicycle and pedestrian master plans, and the Commission conducts all the projects every odd number year. This year's call for projects opened on February 6, 2023. Program capacity is $6.9 million, with each project capped at $690,000. Agency cap is $1.38 million. And jurisdictions may submit up to 3 applications, except for Riverside County, which is 2 for supervisory districts. Applications are due to RCPC online via the Commission's RivTrack system on April 27, 2023. It is the first year we're doing it that way. RCPC staff are available for one-on-one sessions with agencies to provide program eligibility and guidance on the process through April 20th. And with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions? Everybody got their projects ready?
Yeah.
Well, awesome. This is just a presentation. We don't need any items. Right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Edward, and we'll move on now to item number B. This is the expansion of the commuter and motorist assistance program to the Coachella Valley. Brian?
Welcome. Good morning again. So the Riverside County Commuter Assistance Program is administered by RCPC. In 2022, the program expanded to include the Coachella Valley. Separate from this commuter assistance program, the Western Riverside County has had what we call a freeway service patrol program. And although the Coachella Valley segment of I-10 doesn't qualify for the pool program, CBAG has requested an event-based service to just evaluate the utility of the program without. So with that, I'd like to introduce Ryan Cannon with RCTC who has a presentation about both sides.
Thank you, John. Good morning, committee member. It's a pleasure to be here with you this morning to give you an update on RTPC's commuter and motor assistance programs. All right, that's the slide. Most people might associate RCTC with major highway and transit projects, but RCTC also provides a suite of services designed to help make the most of those transportation investments by helping reduce congestion and vehicle emissions, improving highway efficiency and safety and quality of life for those traveling from to or through Riverside County. I'll start with commuter assistance first. Unfortunately, our county has some of the longest commutes and as a consequence, more money spent on the commute and more time lost to the commute, which has to come from somewhere. Unfortunately, it's probably family time, sacrificing sleep, working out, or hobby, all just negatively impacting people's quality of life. Commuter assistance exists to help reduce congestion and help people win back some of that time in their lives when increasing awareness and consideration for alternative modes of transportation for ride-sharing, such as bus transit, rail, or active transportation when possible, or carpool or vanpool that transit options don't align with their route or schedule. I'll cover this more later, but until recently, this program has been limited to Western Riverside County, which has a specific measure to carve out for commuter assistance in the original and extended measure. iCommuter is the brand for commuter assistance. It's a bi-county effort administered by RCTC and partnered with SBCTA to serve inland empire constituents and employers with core services listed here. A cornerstone of iCommuter is employer partnerships. Through one relationship, we're able to more efficiently access many employees, commuters, and help provide information services like transit itineraries or provide matches to join existing carpools or vanpools or start their own. iCommuter also provides a variety of incentives that help increase consideration to try ride sharing, such as the popular $5 per day incentive, rewarding those that ride share to work. We also provide a guaranteed ride home service, providing free trips to those that ride share to work, but have an emergency to attend to in the middle of the day, like a sick child or elderly parent. This is the general life cycle for employers that take advantage of the full suite of services available for iCommuter. This involves engagement, education, and encouragement towards green transportation options. Employees are surveyed electronically via email or paper surveys, and those interested in ride matching can opt in, be matched with others, and will receive a ride guide with information on all the transportation options available to them, as well as any incentives they may be eligible for. iCommuter can also help regulated employers, those with 250 or more employers, comply with air quality regulations by helping with average vehicle ridership calculations to determine emission reductions at work sites. And the incentives and marketing resources made available for iCommuter can also be leveraged as compliance strategies and provided at no cost. Alternatively, large employers can opt for more costly compliance options by purchasing emission credits or $46 per employee. So for example, if you're an agency or business with 500 employees, you could pay $23,000 to the AMU or leverage iCommuter services at no cost, all while providing your employees with more transportation options and alternatives. Shown here is a sample of some of the more than 270 employees that iCommuter partners with. So just imagine that workflow from the previous slide replicated across the various employers we work with in the IEP. Through one relationship with an employer, iCommuter is efficiently accessing and increasing awareness and consideration amongst many employee commuters and helping those that are opting in, raising their hand, and wanting a better commuter. And the more people we can reach, the more we can help. There's a lot of changes have been made to the RTTC CAP program in the past 5 years, so I want to take a moment to review those. In 2018, we launched a new manual subsidy program, ManClub, to provide additional incentives for higher density manual arrangements destined for work sites in Western Riverside County. This complements Sun Life's program, Soul Band, which similarly incentivizes manholes going to Eastern Riverside County work sites. While Manclub peaked at 80 manholes before the pandemic, it's currently just about half that at 40 vans, but is steadily growing back. In 2019, we launched a small but successful concept called Try the Trick Tuesday with two employee work sites in downtown Riverside. This pilot concept had iCommuter meet a group of new riders at the station, get a brief tutorial, ride with a group on the train, and two of the connecting shuttle service to the work site from beginning to end. iCommuter essentially served as a marketing Sherpa for these first-time riders. What was awesome about that event is three people decided that same day to purchase monthly passes and start using MetroLink on the spot. Being in transportation, we're no stranger to transit, but if you don't know how to do it, you might not even try, even if it's an option for you and even if you're provided a free ticket. This is another layer of riders we can recruit with concepts like this. The next employer event was supposed to be with UCR in April of 2020, which obviously didn't happen, but we look forward to resuming these again in the future in some form. Also in 2019, RCTC board approved a path towards a regional rideshare system, which would integrate iCommuter database, consisting primarily of Riverside and San Bernardino County employers and commuters merging with the LA Orange County Ventura rideshare database. Given all the intercounty commutes in Southern California, this integration will help increase the database's ride matching potential for users and help reduce costs for the participating CTCs. In 2020, the first phase of that regional integration involved getting on the same platform as our neighboring counties, and we took that opportunity to revamp the iCommuter.org website. In 2021, as part of a pandemic pivot, a new telework employer assistance program was launched. Employers get access to telework resources and an incentive they can extend to those that telework and log their activity. Reporting of reduction in trips, EMT, and emission reductions are available at the individual and worksite level, and currently there are 83 employers enrolled. A big change in 2022 was launching a new incentive that provides $5 per day for every day a participant registers to work in a three-month period up to $125. It's been hugely popular and has really helped bring some new employers that we haven't worked with before and commuters that weren't in our database. Another big change was extending to Eastern County, so employers and commuters in the Coachella Valley and beyond could also participate in the new $5 per day rideshare incentive. This is being funded by the Motorist Assistance Cyber Safe revenue this year and next fiscal year, continue to offer a consistent level of commuter assistance services throughout the county. Jumping to 2023, this quarter, we're anticipating completion of regionalizing the program with the version of the iCommuter employee commuter database with neighboring counties. And later this year, using Caltrans funds, we're looking forward to launching a program to provide free rail passes to all Riverside and San Bernardino County residents for up to 3 months. This will be iCommuter's first venture into engaging those that travel for purposes other than work. Work-based commutes will obviously still be a big focus, but there's still a lot of opportunity there. And with this new rail promotion, iCommuter will also look to engage student markets and leisure and other trips accessible via the rail. And we're targeting to launch later this year. For Coachella Valley, the employers and commuters have been very receptive to the expansion and especially access to the new incentive. Currently, there are nearly 9,000 commuter records in the database, 56 employers, 20 of which are employers enrolled in to offer the $5 per day incentive for their employees. And today, we have 106 participating in the $5 per day incentive. Of the 44 that have completed the process, meaning they completed the 3 months and logged all their rideshare activity, that translates to nearly 5,300 vehicle trips saved and a reduction of 166,000 in VMT. The goal is to continue to drive the numbers on top up, grow the number of employers we partner with, and commuters in the rideshare database, increase awareness and consideration for alternative modes to drive down SOB trips, VMT, and emissions. This is the part that I get excited about because it's an opportunity to really level up our efforts. We're getting the platform right, merging our database with the rest of the region, making sure we're capturing all of Riverside County, expanding our target markets. So as we grow the database, it not only increases the value for ride matching, more patterns and opportunities should emerge to move more people more efficiently with more data. For example, I know it's probably hard to see given a small grant, but there's almost 400 people commuting from here to Riverside and Moreno Valley. Can those be condensed into several land pools, or is there enough to warrant a commuter link service type service? And are there new local routes that currently don't exist that could emerge the more origin and destination data that we have? Sometimes it can feel like we're planning for a wedding reception with very little information on purposes or RSVPs. So this is a summary of the 9,000 records in the Eastern Riverside County for this mode and destination in aggregate. Happy to provide custom reports broken down for your respective cities if there's interest. We can also report on other items like how many opted in or trip length, incentive participation, employers and work sites or other data. With your help, it'd be great to see the database grow with more employers and more commuters that we can help. All right, switching gears to motorist assistance. As the service authority for freeway emergencies are safe for Riverside County, RCTC receives $1 for every registered vehicle in Riverside County to provide a comprehensive motorist aid program. This originally was exclusively for call boxes, then expanded to FSP and 511 Traveler Information Services. This funding can also be applied.
Joey, can you hear us from over there?
Yes, I can.
Okay, thank you.
This funding can also be applied to fund transportation demand management programs like commuter assistance, which, as I mentioned, is being used to fund the expansion into Eastern Riverside County. Okay, we're going to jump to... It's not.
Oh, thanks.
There we go. Currently, there are 136 call boxes remaining after the last reduction in 2019 before incurring costs to upgrade each of the units to 4G. This reduction involved removing all call boxes in urban areas, call box types no longer compliant with Caltrans guidelines, and those with very low call volumes. A major advantage to the call box system over a cell phone is that the call center and CHP know the caller's exact location, which helps with response times, especially in rural areas where it can be hard to describe in the location. Next fiscal year will mark 5 years since the last reduction, and we'll be reassessing the program and coming back with a recommendation, which may be to maintain as is, reduce, sunset the program, and or introduce or pilot different approaches or technologies. In concert with FPCTA, looking for potential motorist assistance related grants to explore new technologies and or opportunities to review to improve the emergency response, considering ideas like more prominent and frequent mile marker signage or markings so people using a cell phone can more easily identify their location in the event of an emergency. Jumping to 511 is a three-digit dialing code designated by the FCC, made available nationwide to provide real-time information about travel conditions. Last year, we transitioned from a Riverside San Bernardino provisional program to a regional SoCal 511 service administered by LA Metro. In doing so, we've reduced costs and are benefiting from some new enhancements, such as traffic information at the arterial levels being available, and now Spanish-speaking users can navigate the automated phone tree in Spanish. We're also expecting to launch a new app later this year. Last but certainly not least is an update on freeway service patrol, the roving tow service provided on the most congested highway segments in Western Riverside County. Last year, FSP performed nearly 63,000 assists, and later this year, fun fact, FSP will be celebrating 30 years of service, and congratulations to CVAC for 50 years, by the way. I know bringing FSP to Coachella Valley is of great interest, and John had asked for us to provide an update on that. And so to start a new FSP beat, Caltrans requires that a service area have a benefit cost threshold of 3 or more. This calculation takes into account congestion, average annual daily traffic volumes, incidents, and lane geometries. The segment with potential that we've been monitoring regularly is centered around a 6-mile stretch between Monterey and Washington Avenue. A benefit cost analysis was performed late last year by the same consultant that does the statewide analysis, and it came out to a benefit cost of 2.3 compared to the 3.0 Caltrans requirement. That's the first hurdle. The second hurdle would be funding. When we eventually do get to a point where it does meet the threshold, there is not enough funding to expand the program at this moment. It's because of that, in RCTC's last traffic relief plan, we did have a special carve-out to expand FSP into the Coachella Valley, and absolutely will include that if that comes up again. In the meantime, John had also asked if event service for Coachella Stagecoach would be feasible, and we are looking into it. It's going to be a challenge given the short time frame to do that this year, as it involves different CHP territory, comm centers, radio system that hasn't been used this far east. But we will try and definitely aim to have a event-based service go live in the next fiscal year or next year. This concludes my presentation. I know that was long, so appreciate everyone's attention. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions?
And Scott.
I just wanted to support the freeway service patrol. It's something I brought up years ago that we need to really look at here in Coachella Valley. Obviously, we have the events in April that are really important, but we have every major holiday that Coachella Valley suffers count. And we have points in Palm Desert where the lanes go down through the lanes and pinch. And then we also have the major whitewater thoroughfare that just slows traffic all the way to the 1610 split and the pass areas. So something we got to continue to consider and make sure that we find ways to help relieve that if we can. And that service is a good service.
Yeah. You mentioned that there's not enough funding. I remember 5 years ago when we cut back the number of call boxes because some of them were used like once a month or something along that line. And at that time, I suggested we should get rid of all of them, but that didn't pass. But hopefully this time we can just get rid of them because they are very expensive. They need to be maintained, and that's money that can be used to provide the service that Mayor Mattis has suggested that we so desperately need. So if you could bring back to your mothership in Riverside, I think we need to reassess again the money that we're spending on these call boxes that are virtually never used for true emergencies. I know people order pizzas on them and things like that, but I mean they're totally antiquated, and it would be much cheaper to give everybody a cell phone that doesn't have one, because I think there are 3 or 4 people that don't have cell phones, and be done with it, and that would have a tremendous cost savings.
Jack?
Well, and I was one of the people who said we shouldn't take out all the call boxes.
I remember that.
Do you remember that?
Yes.
The reason being, and somebody said, oh my gosh, look how many you have on the strip between Coachella Valley and Blythe. And I reminded them it looked like a lot because it was on a 16-inch screen. It's actually many, many miles. And there are people out there who do need a call box on occasion. And it's hot out there. And if you're one of those 3 or 4 people who doesn't have a phone.
Wave to a trucker.
But for someone to be stranded out there with a phone that perhaps is out of power or for any other reason, there are places that they are still appropriate. I'm sure we could cut back on the number of them, but there are places when you look at where we are in between Blythe, there is a need for them.
But if the call box is 5 miles away, what good is that going to do? In order to do as you're suggesting, we'd need one at least every half mile. You can't expect anyone to walk, 6 miles to a call box when there's trucks going back and forth, and all you got to do is wave at them or say help or something, and they'll call the highway patrol.
Well, then,
yes. What, is there any truckers here? You're a trucker, right?
No, but he is on the transportation committee at SCAD and would like to remain there, and he understands how important these call boxes are.
Can Blythe interrupt?
You're next, Julie.
I have to agree with Jan. I was one of the ones that disagreed with you as well, Lena. And I don't think you have to go as far as going out on the 10th life. I think you can just go out on Coachella on 86. So I think we have to be very careful before we just eliminate it.
Joy?
Yes, back in the day when we talked about this, what they did is run numbers on how many, the box location, how many calls they got in the year. The ones that weren't getting no calls, they took away. But the main thing in Blythe and out in this area, we got Highway 78 and we got Highway 95. There's areas that the self-service does not work. So that was the reason back in the day to keep some of those. There's few of them there that were close where self-service was, they took away. But the ones where there was no self-service, or had issues, they do work. They had the numbers of like one or two boxes were used 150 times in a year. So I'm just using that to just do the research and find where the locations are needed. And I think that's the best way to go.
Right.
I hate to change the subject back to question of our speaker, but I do have a question of our speaker. So how far does the tow service come out now on the 10?
On the 60, it goes through Verner Valley, Theodore Street. So it kind of cuts off right before the bad lines.
Okay. Yeah. So has a study been done as to its utility for the remainder of the 60 and the 10 through the pads?
There has. I just mentioned the one in Coachella Valley, but there is a segment kind of in the Manny Beaumont area that is also that we're also monitoring as part of this. So those two are the kind of the next in line in terms of congestion that we're looking.
Yes, because if the Monterey Washington segment doesn't meet the numbers, I think it's still very beneficial to the Coachella Valley commuters if the pass and perhaps at times if the numbers warranted at that service. So I'd encourage you to continue to look at those.
Wayne?
Thank you, Chair.
I'm just going to agree with everyone else. Until such is the time that we can have enough cell towers between here and whenever, I think we need to keep some of those boxes. I think, you know, I agree with Blythe there. To the extent that the numbers match up, we need to keep going. When we get more cell towers and the coverage becomes more significant, then I think we can revisit.
Well, that's why we're here and we're having, you know, in-person meetings to have these good debates and conversation, but this is just an information item, and thank you for the presentation. We'll move on now to appointment of the regional representatives at SCAG Policy Committee. Peter?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'll keep my presentation very brief. CBAG as a representative of Southern Government, as a participant in Southern California Association of Governments, has representation on the policy committees, one of which is the Transportation Committee. We like to review those assignments every 2 years, and so that brings to this point in time. Councilmember Russell Best from Mr. Cosbrink has been representing CBAG for the past 3 years due to a midterm appointment, and with that, CBAG recommends that this committee discuss any additional nominations or renominations for Best, Councilmember Best, excuse me, so that we can take that to the executive committee. Thank you, sir.
Is there, I'll move on to nomination of Russell Best. There is a motion by Desert Hoshman and a second by Tom Dozier. Any alternate? Seeing none, can we get a roll call? For all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All right. Any abstentions? Any no's? Joey is a yes. He still gets what he's saying.
Yes.
You can use your call box.
All righty, we'll move on now to congratulations, Russell. Thank you. And we'll move on now to local agency technical assistance grants for broadband master plan. Good
morning, Honorable Chair, members of the committee. It's been years for Tunnel Valley regarding broadband and planning for it, and trying to accomplish a Chandrakanti strategic broadband plan. So as you may recall, we had reported this about a year and a half or so ago. Governor Newsom signed SB 156, which allocated $6 billion to broadband here in the state for a number of purposes, middle mile, last mile, and also for planning. And as you recall, these three components are being phased in. Right now, the state is really focused in on planning for last mile projects to get this accomplished. And as you also may recall, we endeavored on securing a middle mile project for the Coachella Valley and leveraging our CDC project to get that done. And although that did not go as planned, the state is still committed to investing in the Coachella Valley for minimum broadband. So we want to leverage those efforts. We anticipate the final round going to 1-9-10. And so based on that assumption, we submitted an application to the CPC for local agency technical assistance to be able to connect last mile project for the middle mile infrastructure. The local agency technical assistance grant allocated $50 million to the program. It's simply oversubscribed. They have already closed out an application, submittal process. And just to give you a quick rundown of what this entails, it's going to really require us to do robust community engagement with all the cities and really develop a plan, get permits, and also engineering plans for last mile projects. This is to give you a quick aerial view of some of the areas that would qualify for last mile based on need and underserved areas. Again, that the route goes down to based on this map showing you where there's significant need here in the valley. The city of Indio secured some dollars on screens as well. The Coachella is in review. CBAG, we applied for close to $1 million, and we're proud to say that on March 16th, the CPUC would have approved that grant for Coachella Valley regional broadband. And there are some funds still available for our tribal nations to apply as well. So we submitted in November, we accepted, we'll accept in April once we get some documents in. We'll put out an RFP for this service and start implementing in 2024. We have 2 years from March 16th to get this done. With that, we are requesting to authorize the executive director to enter into any necessary agreements and take a step to accept the grant.
Is there any questions?
Yes, everyone.
Yes.
I think this, Mayor, does this mean this crossover to what the Congressman did with Frontier when he brought in some of the services to Desert Hot Springs, Hemet, and things, a couple other cities?
No, this is all state funded. It is partially funded by the IIJA, but I don't recall having any discussion or any of what the Dr. Reese did as far as
Columbia shows not hindering us from getting into the grant funding. But I'll move the item. Motion by Heather Hausman.
Second
by Capito City. And well, good work. They're going to accept almost a little less than $1 million. Hopefully we can get another 5 or 10 of them. Well, good deal. All those in favor signify by saying aye or yes.
Aye.
Any no's? Joey? Is it yes? Is it yes? And any abstentions? Seeing none, we'll move on now to item number E. This is implement improvements on Avenue 50 as part of the CD thing. Eric?
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Transportation Committee members. Happy to be back in person. I would like to introduce Chris Dunford. I'm the program manager for CDC. He's also a program manager focused on operations. So thank him. So updating pretty briefly, phase one is complete. We're transitioning to phase two. We're commissioning phase one. We're making sure everything works. Working on the glitches. It's a very complex project. There are a lot of things to work through in commissioning. Phase two is underway. Though. And it was back in January. Our
the construction conference will be next week, and we're going to hit the ground running and do work in just about all of your city and county and downtowns as well. So that kind of updates phase one and two. I'm going to turn it to Chris to kind of talk about what we're doing right now.
Good morning. Thank you for welcoming me. It's been a very fast 6 weeks. Just a little update on how the Regional Traffic Management Center has worked recently with the B&B ferry bot over in Eagle Wells. And from what I understand, it had several record days of attendance that were quite considerable, and I have a short aerial view of some of the traffic going in. This is on Saturday morning, and the traffic ultimately filled up every bit of grass space that you see out there. They were parking cars literally in flower beds. They reached full capacity. And we also, during that event, last year's event, I utilized the La Quinta Traffic Operations Center. And this year we moved over to the Regional Management Center to coordinate working on the signals to maximize traffic flow. And our goal this year was to kind of keep the traffic out of the intersections. We reduced the wait times. There still was some considerable wait times, but we were able to keep the intersections clear. Last year we had some challenges with emergency vehicles getting through and stuff like that. This year we were able to keep everything clear. So I would consider that a win in terms of there. In this picture, along with my bald head, you can see some traffic engineers in there, some of the Advantech engineering staff. One of the notable things about the office during this event was that we also were able to implement and synchronize Washington during the event, which a lot of people would step back and say, okay, we don't want to do that during the tennis event, but we were under timeline. So working with the contractors, working with the engineers, we were able to not only synchronize Washington, but also reduce traffic delays on Washington and 111 in real time.
Washington between what and what?
The biggest delays on Washington are between Miles and Fred Waring, and sometimes even back to Avenue of the States. But and we were able to mitigate traffic in real time. It was a neat event. And with that, I'm open for any questions.
Any questions?
I have a comment.
Yeah.
This is the first time back in person, so I want to talk a lot again. We should change roles at work and travel to the other places. And as we move forward, this is kind of a global comment. Seeing a lot of transportation projects in Shell Valley and a lot more businesses growing and those types of things. I think this is obviously very, very important. But mitigating that traffic beforehand and not being reactive and being more proactive is probably something, I don't know if we should study as a transportation committee or even the executive committee. A lot of mayors are invited each year to the Women's Realtors Association to speak on your things. And the biggest topic there was, traffic intensifiers, I think, around that time. So we just opened up a brand new arena, which is obviously booking bigger, bigger, bigger acts. Seems to not have enough parking. They find parking for it, obviously, but not enough. And as the Coachella Valley continues to grow, with this synchronization program, how do we mitigate the projects that are going on in individual cities, with each traffic center, and those types of things? Just questions to put out there, things to think about for the future. I don't know what the last growth study was in Coachella Valley, but I don't know if I'm just getting older and less patient, but it just seems to be a lot more people in Coachella Valley.
I might chime in. What you're doing here is really unprecedented. You can go into other communities and they'll have a traffic management center. Rarely you can say, oh, the Corona Traffic Management Center, very sophisticated. Can you step across the street into County Unincorporated or Norco and adjust their timing? You're able to do that here. And for an event like the tennis tournament that is sitting on the edge of really four jurisdictions,
one city, and certainly not Indian Wells on its own, could manage the traffic without this kind of capability. And thinking ahead, Mayor, you asked, well, can we think ahead? The idea here is that for every one of these events, we're going to learn from it. And these guys are going to have a preset that says first day of the tournament or first Saturday of the tournament. These are the types of conditions that we will see, and they'll make adjustments accordingly. And for things like the tennis tournament, you might have seen in the TMC, they were watching the tennis tournament. Well, despite, I don't know if you're tennis player fans or not, but they were watching because they needed to know when the event was over or when it was beginning. So some things we do have to adjust on the fly, and they're doing it. Obviously, the Ironman was a success. This year, I expect the tennis tournament to be only better year after year. And that delay getting off the freeway, we are working with Caltrans on the metering of the freeway all the way into Indian Wells to be less every year despite the tennis tournament growing.
Okay,
and the same thing will go
occur. That's my next question.
And of course, you have an action item very much related to that. I assume, Eric, you're going to cover?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah, I would just assume that's why you stole Chris.
It is.
Every year we have these events, Chris was integral, obviously, in helping us make Ironman a much better event, not just for the people who are here for the event, but for all of us who live here all along. So it is good to see him transitioning into taking over for the entire valley, as much as we regret his absence and we change our places.
Thank you.
Welcome aboard, Chris.
As a shout out, during the event, we did have representatives from La Quinta and Indian Wells in there, and because they were seeing what was happening in real time, they were able to deploy resources to help out. And so, big shout out to both those cities.
Yeah, these are all good things. I think the pursuit of the perfect, you know, we'll never get there. And I think for us, it's about getting good data so that we can preset deals. And let's also not lose track of the overall picture. I think there's two things. We have great quality of life for our residents. And then the other is the quality of the special event. And from what I've heard from folks, yes, they had a little bit more traffic, you know, they lived here and they dealt with it, but it wasn't that much compared to other big cities. And I also heard from visitors how great things worked here and how enjoyable their experiences were here in the Coachella Valley. So I think kudos to you guys for, you know, being real time, even though we dealt with some glitches, and that's normal. And I imagine that in India with the Coachella Festival, we're going to hear some, you know, little things too, but we're trying to get our system down, and I just thank you guys for all the work.
Okay, thank you very much. We'll also bring this back over here.
I appreciate it.
Thanks,
Chris, for the day of retail.
Yeah. If you think about it, we didn't have this system, what would have happened?
And they need charges.
We need charges, Dana.
Thanks, Chris. And then, following up on what I said, we had Ken Smallo, the director of public works from the city of New Orleans, considered himself something of a skeptic, as he explained it to me, but now considering himself to be a true fan of what we're doing, he lived in here and he was able to direct forces and work with the city of Bethesda to help direct forces to address issues in the field. It really opened his eyes. And the other side of that is, again, as Tom mentioned, that as we go forward, we have identified, as each of these events occur, we see the first time maybe some of the weaknesses, some of the areas where the coordination isn't as strong as it should be, and we make note of those, and we look forward to improving on those before the event happens. So, and that we work every event that happens in the valley. As they come, and as our system allows, right now we're just on Washington, reminded one another, but soon after is two, which I'm going to talk about, will be throughout the entire So back in December, we awarded, the executive committee awarded phase two construction across town. And at the time, the bid was going to be $87 million. It was a lot. And so we, as staff, pulled back and said, we better put in some bid alternates because we're afraid that the number might get too big. So we put in three bid alternates tied to phase two, one for Portola, one for Avenue 44, one for Avenue 50. There were a couple of others tied to fiber optic, but I'm not addressing those. We didn't pull the trigger on those yet either. We did promise that we would, as staff and as an organization, we'd go out and look aggressively for funds for those. We did find, and applied for, $3.8 million of 100% money for federal community project program funding through our elected officials in Washington. And for Avenue 50, we are going to work with RCTC to try and identify any funds that may be available. Typically, the state shows Caltrans lays out, and RCTC lay out a five-year projection of say, inter-quality funds. This year, they didn't do that, so there's a lot of uncertainty as to what's out there. We're recommending that whatever we can get in terms of CMAQ funding, we will try to get, and that the balance, that if we're unable to get it, we would like to pull from local transportation funds and pull the trigger on Avenue 50, in large part because of the events that take place along that corridor that traverses a number of our cities and the county. It's a truly regional corridor with large events to coordinate. So we are recommending kind of a twofold recommendation. One is that we pull the trigger on that bid alternate, A3, to Crosstown Electrical and Data for an amount not to exceed $5.6 million in change, and to fund Avenue 50 for phase two added to the orders, and at the same time to authorize us to work with Riverside County Transportation Commission to find additional money as it may become available. Happy to answer questions.
Any questions? Is there a motion?
I'll make that motion. How's that?
Thank you. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any abstention? Joey?
Yes.
Yes. And any abstentions? Any noms? Hearing none, motion carries. Move on now to item number 7. If this is an information item on the status of our interchange projects, a few other statuses. Move on to item number 8, the public comments on non-agenda items. We do have public comments. Russ Betts from the City of Delahousie. Welcome, Russ.
Thank you. In 2010, our city council made a move to be graffiti-free in Desert Hot Springs. And we didn't think it was a good look when people drove through the city to see graffiti everywhere. We brought in 10 trucks, and one day, all the graffiti was gone. And then through a very aggressive program, we kept it that way all this time. Got to the point where, so many people would find it put up graffiti. They put it up at midnight, but our crew was out there, and by the time they woke up in the morning, it was already gone. And so it got to be very, they got very discouraged where we went. And so how that relates to this commission, which is transportation, not graffiti, is that when we drive through other parts of the city, I'm sure Mayor Mattis will agree, and we see graffiti, it kind of jumps out at us. It's shocking because we're not used to seeing it. And I've noticed a couple of places, being the Virgo that I am, that it's been persistent, and I want to see if there's some way that there's some effort that this commission can take up to deal with those areas. One would be the Whitewater Bridge, which you go out the Penn. It's frequently covered with graffiti. It gets covered over, but it gets covered over maybe 2-3 weeks later, not instantly. And then the other one would be down by the Agua Caliente Casino as you're heading north on Bob Oak, getting ready to go over. That was a big block wall.
That's also frequently covered over with graffiti. We have done such a great job in this valley of the events and everything that's going on, and I just think there's something that, if there's something we can do in these areas that we as cities don't control, what Caltrans does, that we could ask them to get way more aggressive and make sure that whatever gets put up is taken down instantly. There's millions of people over valley. I don't want them to have a good impression. So it's been on my mind a while, and not taking any longer. That's my two cents worth. Thank you.
Good job on the graffiti in your city. Thank you for those comments. Any other person would like to address this committee? Seeing none, Supervisor Perez, do you have a paint delivery?
Yeah. So for most steps weren't able to make the SIA, the Water Diligence Success, on lobby 410, and it sold out again. However, we do have some money. Some cake still available. Please allow me to make one. And there is a delegation coming from Colima Medico Wednesday night. They're going to be here Thursday, Friday, Saturday, leaving on Sunday. And this is a small pueblo known as Pautemo, and the smallest state of Mexico, which is Colima. That is the hometown of my in-laws, of my wife. And I've been traveling out there for quite some time and visiting with the mayor and local policymakers and just trying to understand, you know, a few things that they have going on out there when it comes to policy. So they're coming over here in a cultural education exchange. And we're doing a signing ceremony on Friday. You're all invited. I'm hoping that you received an email by now. If not, we'll send you one ASAP. And the signing ceremony is on Friday, I believe, at 3 o'clock. However, they're coming to learn about waste services, for example. They're going to talk to Frank Orlett and Vertec. They're going to come and learn about animal services and touch base with the county, economic development, so the Office of Economic Development as well, ag. We'll be sitting down with folks like Anthony Bianco, that type of thing. And then I'm going to show them a couple of places out here in the Coachella Valley, like the tramway, and, you know, we'll probably go hang out in El Paseo for a few hours, right? That's that old town, La Quinta. We do the murals in Coachella, you know. So we're gonna try to do some fun stuff along the way as well as make it educational. So you're all invited to attend the signing ceremony if you have the time on Friday, and we'll send you some
information. Where it's going
to be? It'll be right here. Yeah. Either here or in the parking lot. I haven't figured it out yet. But
will you be serving food?
You know, it's at 3 o'clock. We'll have drinks, but yeah. I'll make sure of food.
I make some extra cake.
But week long, that was pretty. That's gonna take home. Anyways, so everyone's invited.
All right. Thank you. All right, with that, we'll move on now to item number 9. This is announcements of our next meeting of the Transportation Committee.
I'm sorry.
I didn't see it.
No, I don't have cake, but. I did want to mention a couple of things on the SCAG. First, our RCTC, thanks for elevating the room to ties. That was very nice. You all have ties on. SCAG, the General Assembly, is coming to JW Marriott on May 4th and 5th, and we'd like to see you all there. And on May 2nd, SCAG is having some workshops for the Connect SoCal. So it's for the regional transportation plan. So it'll be at the UCR Palm Desert campus. There are two meetings, one's from 12 to 3 and one is from 4 to 6. So that, get it to your community members, to everyone here, so that you can offer your thoughts and opinions on the regional transportation plan that will be going into place in 2024. Your input's really important. I did also want to mention that I represent CalCOG for CBAG, and we had the annual meeting, and I got to speak about CDSync. And the focus of this meeting really was a lot about regionalism. And as you heard Tom talk about Corona and sort of the parochial way they looked at their traffic management, and not that that is their intention, but that winds up being the result. the Coachella Valley Association of Government stands out at its excellence at taking regional approaches and the results of those regional approaches. And we got to talk about that at Calcoc in front of all these people from all over California and how well CVAC does with that. And then the other thing I wanted to mention, and as we talk about the electric vehicles, and it's so important, and I realize that this is all about clean air, sometimes we blur the policy. And the other day I was on the 10 going to Omnitrans to talk about the race to zero emissions, and I was at a dead stop. I drive a hybrid, there's a hybrid next to me, there's an electric car next to me, there's an electric car next to me. So we don't want to blur the policies. Yes, electric cars, they achieve the high quality air we all want, but they don't diminish the congestion that we also want. You heard discussion about quality of living and how the congestion takes from that. So we have to make sure we're focusing on both good air, and we have to do our best to get the cars off the road and the other transportation modes as well. So that's what I've got, and I hope that everybody gets a chance to offer opinions on the regional transportation plan for SCAC. I can assure you that Mr. Betts will. He always speaks up for his transportation needs.
Thank you for those comments. And moving on to item number 9. This is, again, our next meeting will be held on May 1st, 2023 here, and then our executive committee meeting this Monday, April 24th, 2023 here as well. And with that, we are going to do our turn.
Two minutes over the hour.
Please.
That's not a nice small.